You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 1st of October. We have a basketball game to talk about. Not much of one, but still a basketball game. An opening play that told a story, some different strategy techniques, and an overall look at the Jazz plus individuals thrived. We'll touch on all of those things as we continue, plus get to know Grayson Allen. It's all on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Took a mountain biking fall this weekend, and the drum roll, which for whatever weird reason needs me to actually do the drum roll, is not quite up to par. Feel like a wide receiver crossed the middle and got trucked by a linebacker on the right side. Yeah. Went down in the midst of the beautiful colors at our Park City. If you get a chance to come up, it is just tremendously gorgeous out. I would just suggest if you do it on a mountain bike to stay on your bike for the whole ride. All right, we've got a fun show coming up for you today. Thanks to the many new additions to the Facebook group, the Locked On Jazz Facebook group. I gave you guys a little bit of a tiny empty the noggin yesterday that wasn't the full-blown empty the noggin, but little exclusive coverage. So you're welcome to join us on the Locked On Jazz Facebook group. Would love to have you. League Audio League Pass is for sale, $9.99. What you get is every single radio broadcast of the NBA season of every team, and it sounds as though the capability to play that on your home device, if it's an Alexa, so Alexa or your Amazon Echo, either of those two, you'll be able to tell it to play the broadcast and have it in your house. So that's kind of a cool feature with that $9.99 if you get that. So hope that's good for you. Welcome to Damon Passy, Xander Edwards, Dave Kimball, Jackson Wester, Riley Lewis, Taj Skidmore, Charlie Smith, Sloan Urey, Andrew Alexandrowitz, Roger Roth, and Derek Merrill and Jennifer Robinson. Hey, the great former Ballet West ballerina, now living in North Carolina, one of my all-time favorites. All right, let's get to the show. First play of the game told me a story. The first play of the game, which when Igor was with the Jazz, Igor's a big believer in the first play of the game. If you watch the Suns at all this year, he's a big believer that on the first play of the game, you kind of can establish something. And so he tries to just kind of get his team to have that confidence. It'll probably be particularly important in Phoenix. The first play of the game for the Jazz was a pass by Rubio into Gobert. Then Rubio split off Donovan. Donovan ran by Rudy. And when the big kind of stepped, expecting the handoff to Donovan coming downhill, Rudy took two left-hand dribbles to the middle and dunked. Now, Perth is disastrously undersized, and it was quite a mismatch. But I thought this was an interesting play right out of the chute. One is it got Rudy engaged. Two, it showed some of Rudy's increased skill level. And three, it's actually got a play that was pretty prominent in the WNBA playoffs this year, that with all the dribble handoff things, if you can get guys coming downhill at the handoff and the defensive big steps out, well, then you just got to roll to the basket. Now, in the W, they're not jamming at home the way Rudy did, but if you're able to get four out, bring the big in, and now if Favors is on the floor, it's going to be a little more difficult because it'll be clogged in there. But if they, you know, if you've got Donovan coming from the top on a downhill cut right at Rudy, and that defender is lost contact, the big has to step over. And the minute he does, Rudy can turn to the basket. I think, particularly with Favors, this will be a new aspect that we'll see. What you're beginning to see out of all these teams when you watch the preseason games is how you deal with switching. The switching was so prominent in the playoffs last year, how you're dealing with switching. So if you're getting the ball to the elbow and that big steps out to the cutter, he's off his man. If the other guy's trailing, there's nobody to switch onto the ball handler, and so Rudy rolls to the basket. Nice play. And I thought showed a lot. early in the game, the Jazz really pushed the ball ahead and did something unique. They pushed the ball ahead with cross-court passes, which I haven't seen a lot of teams do. Now, this might have been just because Perth, again, undersized. You're able to have some passing lanes. But the impact that I saw for Perth, again, right, every time I say that, like we have to put the asterisk next to this performance, and that's not in disrespect to them, but I mean, this just was there was a talent gap that was tremendous. What jumped out to me was when you play transition defense, you run back to your spots, you find your man, you kind of pull to that side. Everyone's kind of overloaded to the side of the floor. When the Jazz crossed the ball over the top of that defense early in the set, the Jazz were able to get breaks in driving lanes that I haven't seen a lot of teams get in transition. Now, can they do that against Toronto, against better size? I'm not so certain. We'll find out Tuesday, and then we'll really find out whether they can do it against Sacramento and Golden State and Memphis and Houston and New Orleans in the opening week of the season. But that certainly was eye-opening, or at least something new that I hadn't seen before by that. The Jazz also took 40% of their shots in the restricted area in this game. Now, again, right, we got it. But that's an interesting number because as we've all gotten so hyped up in the money ball aspect of three-point shooting, last year the Clippers had the second-best points gained offense in the NBA. What I mean by that is if you just look at pure shot distribution last year, the Clippers had... If everyone in the league's team shot average, just based on where you took your shots, the Clippers had the second most points above average. The Rockets were +4, and the Clippers were +2. Big. How did they do it? They shot 39% of their shots at the rim. That was the league high. The Jazz were at 42% of their shots at the rim. As much as the three-pointer is an emphasis, the shooting at the rim should be a bigger emphasis. Points at the rim are 1.4 points, or free throw line 1.4. Rim is 1.3. Corner three is 1.2. Above the break is 1.1. The mid-range is 0.8. You see that. Now, the key there was the 1.4 free throws, because if you're going to the rim, you're more likely to get fouled more. And the free throws have dropped. So two areas of the game where numbers are dropping are offensive rebounds as well as free throws. And if you can take advantage of some of that offensive rebounding and some of that free throw shooting at a rate higher than everybody else and shoot at the rim, the most efficient spot on the floor more, now you really are into a points gained concept that I think we're trying to see what the Jazz are trying to do there. So those were the things that just from a big picture jumped out to me in the preseason game versus Perth. Before we get to the Grayson Allen get to know interview, we will talk about the things that we saw individually. Locked On NBA on Mondays is the biggest stories from the local experts. Really interesting conversation about what's going on in Dallas and how they're using Luka Doncic. That's at Locked On NBA today, plus two other stops along the way. And by the way, on Locked On NFL, I hosted it this week. So I went to the three biggest stories in the NFL, the Bears, the Bengals, and the Patriots kicking the crap out of the Dolphins, and stopped by. So I hosted that show this week. Today's show is brought to you by Mazuma USA. If you are a small business owner, 1 to 5 employees, and you're not using Mazuma USA, you're costing yourself time and money. Mazuma USA takes care of all of your bookkeeping, all of your tax planning for an initial price of $75 a month. It's pretty incredible. Call 801-980-2102 for your free consultation or go to Mazuma USA and use the promo code LOCKED. Here's how it works. You set up with Mazuma. They give you a bookkeeper and a CPA. They're yours, attached to you. Then every month you get a report. Every quarter you get a tax discussion. At the end of the year, your taxes are completely ready for you. There's no contract. You can cancel at any time, and there are no hidden fees. That's all your bookkeeping for $75 a month. If you have 1 to 5 employees and you're not using Mazuma, you are losing money. You are losing clarity. Call 801-980-2102. That's 801-980-2102. From a player standpoint, obviously the headliner in the performance the other day was Grayson Allen, right? And he was great. He made his shots. He got himself open. He really did a lot of great things in that performance. This has not been an easy camp for Grayson Allen, as much because there are 14 guys in camp who know exactly what's going on every single play. And the Jazz have really started everything on a little bit of a second level. And here's the rookie trying to figure out what every play was and how they all work. So from that standpoint, pretty nice for Grayson to get that start. I think that was important to him. I'm not as much of a, this shows Grayson Allen has to play. This shows Grayson Allen's going to be great. The media questions that were being asked a great deal in the, is this the shooter the Jazz are looking for? Maybe. But I think he's more of a basketball player than he is a pure shooter. I could be wrong. Frankly, the shooting has been the item that I've been most concerned about in his play, in his possible performance. So, you know, I could be totally wrong on that. But he nailed those early. His understanding of how to get open, his understanding out of space, his aggressiveness, his confidence. I think all those things were as important as anything else. And I just think for his well-being, having a good game was important. Camps, as I said, camp's almost been unfair to him in that he's been trying to figure out, well, you know, what's going on while everybody else is as well. He went 7 of 14. He took the most shots on the roster in 22 minutes. He had 19 points, hit 5 of 9 from 3. So it was just a great start for him. And, hey, if Grayson suddenly hits, you know, on 40% of his threes or something crazy as a rookie, even if he's struggling defensively, it's going to be a little bit hard for Quinn not to play him. This is an aspect that I don't think anyone has really talked about in regards to this team, but returning three-point shooters for the Utah Jazz is not something that you would necessarily write home about. If you look back at last year, Utah Jazz three-point shooting, Donovan's 34%. Rubio's 35, Favors is 22, Ingles is brilliant at 44, Crowder was 32, Cephalosha in 84 attempts was 38, which is above his league average, Dante was 28 in 18 attempts, AB was 33, and O'Neal was 36. So of the returning shooters to last year's team, you have Joe Ingles, who's brilliant, one of the best in the league. I don't think he's going to get 464 looks this year. I just don't think teams are going to allow it. Cephalosha is your second best at 38, but that number feels high. O'Neal's your third best at 36. Rubio's at 35. Donovan's at 34. Burks is at 33. Crowder is at 32. Those aren't... Here's like, we got to break a little bit of the mold. We've talked about this on the show all year. Of idea that 32 means you don't shoot threes, it's still 0.96 points per shot, which is a lot better than a mid-range shot of 0.8. There was a play where Cephalosha bypassed a mid-range shot and was like, oh gosh, don't do that. Or bypassed a three to go take a mid-range shot, and it was like, ah, don't do that. And I think, you know, you have to get out of that mindset and get back into the mindset that you want to take as many, you know, you want to take 40% of your shots as threes. The Jazz did that, 38 the other night of their 96 and really bomb those. But so, yeah, if Grayson can suddenly be an elite level shooter, which I think is a big ask for a rookie, but he's a little different than a rookie just because he's so old and so experienced, then yeah, I mean, all of a sudden you have it, then Grayson's going to work his way onto the floor. The other thing that happened personnel-wise, Jay Crowder was the first guy in, and I think you just saw what we all knew was coming, was that, you know, Crowder and Cephalosha played a lot of four, and I think that's what you're going to see for a huge amount of this season. And then, frankly, if Grayson Allen plays really well, Joe Ingles is going to have to slide down to play some four to get Grayson those minutes. But one game's probably too much. The other guy who's just been consistently good is Alec Burks. He had 18 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. Perth is a matchup where AB's athleticism kills them, but he went 4 of 6 from 3. 6 three-point shot attempts might actually be the eye-opener there. That, you know, AB's been a little bit of a mid-range wonder at times in his NBA career, and taking 6 three-point shots in a preseason game, to me, that actually is the most important thing that I saw in the whole game, is simply that number right there. Last year, AB took 6 three-point shots in 2 games all year. One November 18th, the other November 30th, and then didn't do it again for the rest of the year. In his career, he's never taken more than 6 three-pointers in a game. He's only done it 5 times in his entire career, and interestingly enough, they have always been prior to the turn of the year. He's never taken 6 threes in a game after December 12th. So he comes into seasons, it looks to me as though, like, okay, I got to shoot more threes, I got to bomb these. And then as the year goes on, I think he gets a little reluctant. And it's pretty interesting. So his 5 games of his career where he's taken 6 threes are November 30th, November 18th, December 8th, December 3rd, and December 12th. He's taken 5 threes in a bunch of games as well. But again, listen, one was in April, then December, 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 November, October, March, 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 November, 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 October, March, March, January. So clearly, for whatever, like, at least looking at, when I looked at this the other day, because I was like, 6 threes, I don't think AB's taken 6 threes. AB has started plenty of years in which he's taken 6 threes in a game early and then won't do it again. Some of it's probably injury, but the fact is I think there's something that it's not his natural way to play, and he probably regresses back to some level. So in he's 23 games of his career, he's taken 6 or more threes. Only 8 of the 23 happened after the turn of the year. I don't know. Keep an eye on it. By the way, he shot 43% from 3 in those games. Like, when he lets it fly, he's fine. He might be more likely than Grayson to be the guy who can suddenly start shooting. Like, I don't think of AB as a particularly good shooter, but maybe that kind of confidence and the amount of work he's put on it and the maturity. He's at an interesting stage of his career where those little jumps happen. He's 27 years old still. Like, I mean, there's a real chance. He's a career 35% three-point shooter, and the magic number is 753s. He's at 645. So AB shooting at 35-36% would not be a total stunner at all. For the Jazz. The other, Dante, I think, you know, really interesting that the 3 guys that jumped out in this game were Dante, Grayson, and Alec, the 3 who I think are battling for the most time. Dante just went 1 of 3, but 6 assists, had 3 straight assists at one point, played with a lot of tempo, played with a lot of speed, turned the ball over a few times, which probably needs to be controlled. Grayson turned it over 4 times, by the way, so we can kind of keep an eye on that as well. Royce O'Neal had 4 steals in the game, went 0 for 2 from 3, but had 4 steals. Again, who they're playing. The final one is the Jazz took, I think the Jazz took over 40% of their shots at the rim. Let's keep an eye on this. The Jazz, I think, are putting a huge emphasis with Rudy. And if you think of points gained and how Rudy comes out as one of the best offensive players in the league, if the Jazz can get Rudy to get, you know, another 3 shots a game around the rim, it's a game changer to the offense. You've got Favors and 150 dunks. So if the Jazz are going to play 2 bigs and they can really attack above the rim most of the time in their game with floaters and just presence, that'll open up other things around the basket. So those are my takeaways from Perth game number one. Grayson Allen, get to know, coming up here in just a second. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. The Murdochs and Chevy have been together stunningly for 92 years. That just runs deep. Chevy is the bread and butter of Utah and America, and they've got the best truck lineup all there. All three truck segments, the heavy-duty Silverado, the light-duty half-ton truck Silverado, and the mid-size Colorado, plus the Colorado diesel. The unibody frame is safer. One frame. I'm driving the Equinox right now. If you're looking for an SUV for the winter, here's the lineup, and they're great. Suburban, you know it. Utah Salt Vehicle. Tahoe, you know it. Utah Salt Vehicle. Traverse, you might not know it. Three rows of seating. Every safety feature imaginable. Really cool advanced technology pieces. Then there's the Equinox, which is the mid-size SUV. I'm driving it right now. Incredibly well-made. I talked about this the other day, how quiet it is, having a tendency to get a little extra speed on it every now and then. Oops. I've really, you know, if I ever try to get out of a ticket, I've really killed myself. 1.5 turbo, double cam motor, quick torque, 170 horsepower, quieter, better fuel economy, highest safety rating out there. Really impressed with that. And then there's the tracks below that. Check it all out. It is September to Remember is gone. So, but I think you probably can talk him into no payments till 2019 still. That's at Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross as well as in Logan. Find new roads at Murdoch Chevy.
Time to get to know Grayson Allen. Let's go back. Take me back to your hometown. What would you show me?
Definitely take you by the small, tiny little church right by my house where I grew up and spent countless hours in their gym. By the beach where I spent all my summers. I would work out in a gym probably like 10 minutes away from the beach, and then right after that, shower up, go to the beach, spend the rest of the day there.
Keep your shirt off while you're pumped up, go to the beach. I got it.
Of course, yeah. You know, it's a good strategy. You go before and keep the pump going. Yeah, and then I guess the town center too. It's like it's a lot bigger now than when I actually lived there, but it's a great spot with really much everything you want there.
What was your? It's the birth order. Where are you and brothers and sisters?
I'm the only child, so first and last.
And as an only child, I will not ask you the most hated question of every only child, which is, what's it like to be an only child? That's all I know. What was your childhood room like? If you took me into your childhood room, what did it look like?
So I had, strangely enough, I had bunk beds for a little bit, even as an only child. But I had around third grade, by that time, I had a friend from school who pretty much stayed over all the time. So they were put to good use. And then I had on my closet, I had this LeBron James life-size poster, and it had like a growth chart next to it. And so it like, as I was growing up in like 5'5", 5'6", 5'7", you know, I'd mark my heights down there.
You want to tell a quick story about the pseudo brother you have? I don't know what the kind of brother you have.
Oh, yeah. So about in third grade, you know, I went to a really small school, about like 15 kids. And so he came to the school and he started, you know, coming over. He was living with his sister at the time. And so he started coming over after school while his sister was working and started staying nights and started staying weeks, months, and then stayed for a while and eventually became my brother. And it was weird when he wasn't around. He was around so much. So it was really cool. So by then I wasn't an only child anymore.
It's a little blindside, but it's not quite. It's got some similarities to
yeah.
It. What is in the backyard as a kid, who were you?
In the backyard.
When you were playing or in the gym, at a church gym, when you decided to play, who did you pretend you were?
Oh, Dwayne Wade, always. I'd be outside. I'd have a basketball that was smaller, and then the hoop would be around 7.5 or 8, and so I'd be doing all the Euro steps, the dunks, everything, and I felt like I looked exactly the same as he did, but I definitely didn't at that time.
What is the worst chore you had as a child?
Worst chore? I would say the one I disliked the most was probably the mowing the lawn one. Just because it was so hot, I just didn't want to do it. I would rather go around the corner and jump in the pool or something, or play basketball, do something fun out in the heat, not just mow the lawn.
What was your first nickname?
I had a lot. Like, everyone used to call me just G, just for short. G Money. G Force was one that I had.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
G Money is probably not going to be used in Utah.
No, I doubt it.
Why are you wearing 24?
I'm actually not that superstitious about my number, so I saw the list of available numbers. 24 looked good, so I chose it.
Okay. What do you do in your downtime?
Play a lot of video games, of course, typical. I've gotten into reading lately, so I like to read before I go to bed. I can't just play video games up until I go to sleep.
What are you reading?
Currently, I'm reading a book called Blue Like Jazz that was sent to me. What got me into reading was someone recommended me to read Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Great book.
And I really got into that one, so I was like, okay, there's stuff out there I like. So then I started to look.
Udo's your guy. You know about this?
Yeah.
His book clubs are awesome. It's really incredible. What is your guilty pleasure?
I got a sweet tooth. And so any desserts that involve peanut butter, so Reese's are my favorite.
What is the most memorable moment of your career thus far?
Probably freshman year national championship.
Pretty good one.
Yeah, it's an easy one.
Do you have a single shot that comes to mind?
From that game?
No, at any point in your
career. Oh, yeah, my sophomore year, we played Virginia at home and hit the buzzer beater to beat them.
Cameron went nuts.
Yeah, it went crazy.
It's pretty good. It's kind of why you went to school. If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, who would they be?
This is a tough one. I got to get, some good, peaceful energy going, so I'd probably go Jesus, Gandhi, Buddha.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah.
All right, let's go a little. There's two books. One's Grit and one's Talent Code. They're very interesting, kind of on. What made you believe that you could make it?
I would always convince myself of the confidence by the work that I put in, and so that kind of started when I was young because I wasn't just naturally walk out there with supreme confidence. So it'd be okay, if I just made 500 shots from the spot the day before, I can make a couple playing pickup or playing against these guys. And then so as that confidence kind of developed, and I realized I could do things consistently, play basketball at a high level consistently, then. It's like, okay, as long as I work for it, I don't think I can be stopped.
When you look back at it, how were you different than the other kids? There's clearly some level where you did things differently than everybody else.
Yeah, I was always just super competitive at stuff I did. So we'd be, playing 2-on-2 or 3-on-3 with other guys in the neighborhood or, football out in the yard. Any type of game it was, I was always a little bit more competitive than everyone else. So and once I kind of realized that, I was like, okay, this is different.
So that is usually the younger brother, right, who's trying to compete with the older brother. But as an only child, do you have any thought on, where that stems from?
I have no idea. It was just always in me. It didn't matter what I was doing. I could be playing video games against somebody, just be way overly competitive.
When did you have your greatest doubt?
I'd say my first transition to college was probably tough, just because you go from you're playing and starting your whole life to, okay, you might not get in today, you might get in for 1 minute the next game, you might be holding the ball out in a blowout in the next game, you never know. So I think at that point it was probably the lowest, but thankfully I had rebound and I had a lot of good guys around me that were telling me I would be all right.
It's a long road, and you just got to keep going and keep going. But there are days where, that pool looks better and the video game looks
right.
What gets you back out?
Basketball is just kind of what I've turned to a lot. When I was younger, I would rather go to the gym than go out, and hang out with a bunch of people. And I think it's because I was more introverted anyway, so I was just comfortable in the gym. And so it's always been a place of comfort. And so for me, when when I am feeling down or tough, it's kind of easy for me to be like, okay, go back to your comfort spot. Just get in the gym, get some shots up, you know, nothing too serious, just you and the ball and the hoop.
Is there a nervousness, a fear, or any scared element of this next transition?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all that definitely creeps into your mind, but you just got to block it out. You know, you kind of let the thoughts come and go. And you focus on what you did to get there and what you can do to stay here.
Final thought on this. So one of the things that they talked about in I think the book of Talent Code, they talked about that elite performance is actually just the confluence of a dozen small skills. Just this. Can you give us an example of maybe, or you know, we've drilled just multiple habits that lead to this end result. Can you give us any example of that in your experience?
Yeah, so I think like drilling things a bunch of time where they just become a habit and something that happens that you don't even think about, because I think that's I play my best when I'm not thinking, I'm just reacting, playing off instinct, and the things become instinctual because when I was younger, I caught a ball and I pivoted to go right. And then I practiced dribbling with my right hand a bunch of times. And I practiced those steps that I have to do that right hand layup, or those steps that I have to take that pull up jump shot. And inside that jump shot, I know my elbow's tucked, my head's on the rim, I'm not watching the ball, my follow through straight. So you drill all those things and do countless reps so that they can just come and flow. You don't have to think about it. It's instinctual and you can play without, you don't have to think, I need to pivot, dribble, pull up, shoot, elbow in. It just all comes because you drilled it.
Thanks to Grayson Allen. Tomorrow, Naz Long get to know, then George Niang get to know as well before we go back to the Culture Club interviews. Daniel Coyle did reach out to me, author of Culture Club, so we got a chance of hopefully getting him on the show. That would be incredible and have that for you. Facebook group is Locked On Jazz. Sponsors today, Mizuma USA and Murdoch Chevy. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. We greatly appreciate it. Locked On NBA, biggest stories, local experts. Fun show today here with update on what's going on with Dallas and Luka Doncic, a very good one. They also checked in as well on the latest and some other Boston on Hayward and some other interesting stories. That's all on the Locked On Podcast Network.